पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
टेक्स्ट 40। नेहा विक्रम नाशोस्ति मृत्युवायो न विद्यते स्वल्पमप्यस्य धर्मस्य त्रायते महतो भयात्। इन दिस एंडेवर देयर इज नो लॉस और डिमिनिशन एंड अ लिटिल एडवांसमेंट ऑन दिस पाथ कैन प्रोटेक्ट वन फ्रॉम द मोस्ट डेंजरस टाइप ऑफ फियर। Activity in Krishna consciousness or acting for the benefit of Krishna without expectation of sense gratification is the highest transcendental quality of work. Work refers to material prescribed duties. So the highest transcendental quality of material prescribed duties is when you mix it with Krishna consciousness and you act for the benefit of Krishna without expecting sense gratification. That was like as a sample, consider text 38. This is a good example. Sukhedukhe samaye kritva labha labho jaya jayau tato yuddhaye jasva naivam papam avapsiya. See, do the fight for the sake of fighting without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat, and by so doing you shall never incur sin. So this point, that is a classic example of what we mean by nishkama bhakti mishra karma. Nishkama means you don't desire any personal satisfaction from that. Like the sakama, those who are involved in sakama karma, which is also called sakama bhakti mishra karma, they perform these material prescribed duties in order to derive some, extract material happiness from that. But here Krishna is telling, you have your prescribed duty of fighting. So you engage in that fighting for my pleasure. Because I have given this order to you. I am telling you to do it. So you do it for my sake. So this is called activity in Krishna consciousness. Activity in Krishna consciousness. Even a small beginning of such activity finds no impediment. Nor can that small beginning be lost at any stage. Any work bigger on the material plane has to be completed. Otherwise the whole attempt becomes a failure. But any work begun in Krishna consciousness has a permanent effect, even though not finished. The performer of such work is therefore not at a loss, even if his work in Krishna consciousness is incomplete. 1% done in Krishna consciousness bears permanent results, so that the next beginning is from the point of 2%, whereas in material activity, without 100% success, there is no profit. So notice this classification which I put out here, beginning from the stage of Bhakti Mishra Karma with increasing bhakti. This is the standard pathway of bhakti. This is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur considers to be bhakti yoga, the path of bhakti. You may be at any step, any stage, but you are increasing only one thing. Now this is very important, because after we read this section, we'll go through the acharyas and you will see that they are, sometimes they talk about another pathway in which you change different things at different points in your spiritual life. But in this pathway, at all stages of spiritual advancement, you only increase one thing, bhakti. And bhakti also is clearly defined. It is the type of bhakti which is brought out in Bhagavatam as Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakhyam Atmanivedanam. The reason I am repeatedly underscoring these points is, you will notice there are other definitions of Krishna Bhakti also. Sometimes the scriptures talk about other activities as devotion service to the Supreme Lord. We will see that also. But when Prabhupada talks about Krishna consciousness, Krishna Bhakti, generally is referring to what we commonly refer to as Bhakti Yoga, Navada Bhakti, 9 types of Bhakti, in which your mind is directly fixed on the Supreme Lord. You are hearing about Krishna, you are chanting about Krishna, you are thinking about Krishna, you are worshipping the deity form of Krishna, you are coming to Krishna's holy dham, you are serving Krishna's devotees, directly connected to Krishna. This is called Sakshat Bhakti. So in this process, when you are trying to increase your devotional service to the Supreme Lord, there is no loss. And the classic example is Ajamil. Ajamil performed his duty in some percentage of Krishna consciousness, but the result he enjoyed at the end was 100% by the grace of the Lord. Ajamil, he had in his youth, he had engaged in worship of the Supreme Lord Narayan under his father, and he gave it up. He was attracted to some prostitute. He got distracted by the prostitute. But then later on, because of his previous training and by the mercy of the Lord's devotees, he had somehow given his son the name Narayana, Narayan. So when he chanted Narayan, when he was about to die, he was calling for his son Narayan. But then because of that, the Vishnu Dutas from the spiritual world, Lord Vishnu's messengers, they came and they rescued him. And the Yamadutas were trying to pull him off. But the Vishnu Dutas had him put back, and they also gave Ajamil the ability to perceive all these subtle events that were taking place. So then he continued, he went to Haridwar. He didn't die, so he gave up everything, he went to Haridwar, continued his devotional service to the Supreme Lord Vishnu, attained perfection, and then he went to the spiritual world. So that is a classic example, that Ajamil performed his duty only to some percentage in his youth. It was stopped, but he didn't lose it. He didn't lose, and there was no reaction also. You see, diminution means it goes down. Is whatever he had accomplished in his progress towards the Supreme Lord in devotion, that was preserved. There is a nice verse in this connection in Srimad Bhagavatam. Chaktva swadharmam charanambujam hare bhajanna pakvotha patet tato yadi yatra kvava bhadram abhudamushya kim kovartha apto bhajatam swadharmataha. If someone gives up his occupational duties and works in Krishna consciousness, and then falls down on account of not completing his work, what loss is there on his part? And what can one gain if one performs his material activities perfectly? Or as the Christians say, what profiteth a man if he gain the whole world yet suffers the loss of his eternal soul? Material activities and their results end with the body, but work in Krishna consciousness. Every time you come across this work in Krishna consciousness, keep in mind, it is bhakti mishra karma. You are performing. Karma is something different from bhakti. It is not the same. We should have a very thorough understanding of this. You should know what to increase in Krishna consciousness, what not to increase in Krishna consciousness. Like for instance, people get married. Even in Krishna consciousness, people get married. Marriage is considered to be good. To marry a devotee girl is good. Okay. But that is a material activity by itself. Marriage is a material activity by itself. If a man who has taken to Krishna consciousness marries a girl who has taken to Krishna consciousness, then he is doing two things at one time. He is doing karma. He is not having her as a girlfriend. That is vikarma. He is first of all marrying her. So that is karma. But on top of that, because he is marrying someone who has also taken to Krishna consciousness, that is the feature of sadhu sangha, which is a part of bhakti. To associate with practitioners of Krishna consciousness, to associate with one another and help each other in Krishna consciousness, that is called sadhu sangha. That is a part of bhakti. Whereas getting married is part of karma. So you can simultaneously do two things. So then it is bhakti mishra karma. And if the husband and wife engage in sinful activities, it becomes triple. It's bhakti, karma, vikarma. But we are instructed not to commit sinful activities. So it comes within the scope of bhakti and karma. Now if karma is predominant, if my family duty with my wife is predominant, if my duty towards my wife is of more percentage than my duty towards Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna, then the karma aspect is considered to be more predominant. Then that combination is called bhakti mishra karma. But if my bhakti is predominant, if my duties, spiritual duties are more predominant and my family duties, even though I am executing, I am reducing it, then bhakti is predominant, so it is called karma mishra bhakti. But at any rate, since we are aspiring to come to the point of kevala bhakti, we are considered to be aspiring pure devotees. Because we are aspiring for that. We are not aspiring, we are not interested in stopping at the point of karma mishra bhakti. We are not stopping at the point of bhakti mishra karma. If I want to stop at the point of bhakti mishra karma, if I want to do bhakti mishra karma for my whole life, then I will be called bhakti mishra karmi. If I want to rise up to the platform of karma mishra bhakti and stop with that whole life, then I am considered to be aspiring karma mishra bhakta, not pure devotee. But if I am aspiring for Shuddha Bhakti, Kevala Bhakti, then I am considered to be aspiring pure devotee. So that terminology is used. You should be aware of that. But work in Krishna consciousness carries a person again to Krishna consciousness, even after the loss of the body. At least one is sure to have a chance in the next life of being born again as a human being, either in the family of a great cultured Brahmana or in a rich aristocratic family. That will give one a further chance for elevation. That is the unique quality of work done in Krishna consciousness. So this is the glory of bhakti mishra karma in the pathway of increasing bhakti. Increasing bhakti. 41. Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana bahu shakha hyanantascha buddhayo vyavasayinam. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. A strong faith that by Krishna consciousness one will be elevated to the highest perfection of life is called Vyavasayatmika intelligence. The Chaitanya Charitamrita states, Shraddha Shabde Vishwas Kahe Sudhrudha Nishchay Krishne Bhakti Koile Sarva Karma Krita Hai. Faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. When one is engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he need not act in relationship to the material world with obligations to family traditions, humanity or nationality. Fruitive activities are the engagements of one's reactions from past good or bad deeds. When one is awake in Krishna consciousness, he need no longer endeavor for good results in his activities. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, all activities are on the absolute plane, for they are no longer subject to dualities like good and bad. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. This state is automatically achieved by progressive Krishna consciousness. So if I go on increasing my Krishna consciousness, sadhu sangha nama kirtan bhagavat shravan mathurava shrimurti shraddhai sevan, if I increase the primary items of Krishna consciousness, then automatically I transcend the material conception of life. The resolute purpose of a person in Krishna consciousness is based on knowledge. So even though Krishna is saying that they are resolute in purpose, this is based on knowledge. This is based on spiritual knowledge. This is not based on some sentiment. This is not based on some sentiment. What is that knowledge? Vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. This is a famous statement from the 7th chapter, where Krishna will say, after several lifetimes, a man surrenders to Krishna's lotus feet. And he realizes that everything is connected to Vasudeva. Everything is connected to Krishna. So it is out of knowledge one comes to this point, that there is only one thing I should do. I should only serve Krishna. Even here, look at this. You only increase one thing. You only increase the activities of devotional service. One may be doing, one is duty bound to carry out one's other duties, material duties. Like for instance, Prabhupada was a grihastha. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he saw him, like he was telling every disciple, he told him also that I want to spread Krishna Bhakti throughout the world. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission should go throughout the world. Why don't you do this? Saraswati Thakur used to say this to everyone. And he told this to Prabhupada also. So Prabhupada later on he mentions in one lecture our own conversation. But yeah, I accepted it. But I was bound. I have a wife, I have children. So you're bound. Of course, Prabhupada in his humility, he said, I could have renounced everything, but I was in Maya. And that was his humility. You know, I was an illusion. But you see, you're bound. You're bound in that you're bound with certain obligations. So, but he went on increasing his activities of preaching. That we can see. How he went on increasing his preaching. And naturally at a certain point, becomes a vanaprastha, then he goes on increasing further, he becomes sannyasi. Naturally, you go on increasing. The whole process, it's not that one has to officially become a sannyasi or a vanaprastha. But the point is, our path is the path of increasing Krishna bhakti. We increase the activities of Krishna bhakti. So that is built upon knowledge. Very important, based on knowledge. Vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. A person in Krishna consciousness is the rare good soul who knows perfectly that Vasudeva or Krishna is the root of all manifested causes. As by watering the root of a tree, one automatically distributes water to the leaves and branches. So by acting in Krishna consciousness, one can render the highest service to everyone, namely self, family, society, country, humanity, etc. If Krishna is satisfied by one's actions, then everyone will be satisfied. Everyone means beginning with me. I will be satisfied. I will not be satisfied by anything else. This realization he gets. And this realization is what is called Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. Resolute intelligence. That resolution. It is resolute. It is fixed. Now he's come to the point. And he's come to only one point. It doesn't come to 2 points, 3 points and all. One point. Krishna bhakti koile sarva karma krita hai. If I do Krishna bhakti, the purpose of Vedic culture is fulfilled. Everything is fulfilled. All I need to do is serve Vaishnavas, chant Hare Krishna, visit the holy dham, listen to Srimad Bhagavatam, worship the deities and so on. This is all. I need to follow only one book called The Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That is my practice, that is my propaganda, that is my demonstration. I demonstrate it, I propagate it, I practice it, that is my everything. One comes to this point. If we do not commit sinful activities, if we do not commit offenses, we come to this point. And we engage in Krishna consciousness. Service in Krishna consciousness is, however, best practiced under the able guidance of a spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Krishna, who knows the nature of the student and who can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. So we need a spiritual master who trains us in this, who makes us do this. When Prabhupada was asked, how come Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wrote Shikshashtaka, 8 verses, 8 essential verses which summarizes all of his teachings. But he never said you should accept initiation from a guru, or he never said you should take instruction from a guru. Then Prabhupada said, when one disciple asked him, Prabhupada told that disciple, you have missed the shloka, Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarorapi Sahishnuna, Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. These are the most essential instructions of Lord Chaitanya to a practitioner, that we should become as humble as a blade of grass. We should become as tolerant as a tree. Without any honor, without seeking any honor and giving all appropriate honor to others, we should constantly glorify and chant Krishna's names. And Prabhupada pointed out, you cannot become humble by yourself. You cannot become tolerant by yourself. You cannot develop these qualities by yourself. You need someone who is already this to make you this. So, if one wants to make spiritual progress, Prabhupada's point is, if one wants to make spiritual progress, that person should accept a competent spiritual master, a bona fide representative of Krishna, who knows the nature of the student and who can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. As such, to be well versed in Krishna consciousness, one has to act firmly and obey the representative of Krishna. And one should accept the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission in life. We'll come to this point again. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur instructs us in his famous prayers for the spiritual master as follows. यस्य प्रसादात् भगवत् प्रसादो यस्य प्रसादान् नगतिः कुतोऽपि ध्यायन्स्तु वंस्तस्य यशस्त्री सन्ध्यं वन्दे गुरुश्री चरणारविन्दम्. By satisfaction of the spiritual master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes satisfied. And by not satisfying the spiritual master, there is no chance of being promoted to the plane of Krishna consciousness. I should therefore meditate and pray for his mercy 3 times a day and offer my respectful obeisances unto him, my spiritual master. The whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body, not theoretically but practically. See, the whole process of increasing Krishna consciousness depends on clear understanding of the soul beyond the body. That is why Krishna didn't begin his Bhagavad Gita with these shlokas. He began by first of all pointing out the difference between the body and the soul. And then he started talking about going to heavenly planets. And then he points out even that is not adequate. You should get into devotional service. You see? So the whole process depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body. If I think that my bodily needs are my primary needs, that is a symptom of my material conception of life, then I am thinking I am my body, because my bodily needs are my prime necessities of life. If I imagine like this, that means I am thinking I am my body. But I cannot increase in my Krishna consciousness as long as I have this delusion, this bewilderment. So that's why he is saying the whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body, not theoretically but practically, when there is no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruitive activities. So there should not even be a chance for that to happen. So that is the proof. Given the opportunity, will I go for sense gratification? Okay, if I don't have the opportunity, I will not go. But if I have the opportunity, I will not go. If you have the opportunity and you don't go, then it means that you are spiritually progressed. Then it means one is spiritually progressed. Without the opportunity, if you don't go for sense gratification, what is the great thing about that? What is so great about it? But given the opportunity, you don't accept it. That is a proof. One who is not firmly fixed in mind is diverted by various types of fruitive acts. Fruitive acts refer to materialistic pious activities offered in the Vedas. Fruitive acts. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. People in general are not very intelligent, and due to their ignorance, they are most attached to the fruitive activities recommended in the Karma Kanda portions of the Vedas. So most people who are followers of the Vedas, they are attracted to the Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas. The Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas deal with various processes by which you can have an opulent life of sense gratification in this life or in your next life, and that also in the heavenly planets. The Vedas yield what they promise. They promise this, and they give certain techniques, procedures, and if you fulfill all the conditions and you carry out these activities, then they fulfill the promise. They don't make false promises. The Vedas, they fulfill their promises. They, referring to the people, those people who are attracted to such sections, they do not want anything more than sense gratificatory proposals for enjoying life in heaven, where wine and women are available and material opulence is very common. In the Vedas, many sacrifices are recommended for elevation to the heavenly planets, especially the Jyotishtoma sacrifices. In fact, It is stated that anyone desiring elevation to heavenly planets must perform these sacrifices. And men with a poor fund of knowledge think that this is the whole purpose of Vedic wisdom. So they think this is the whole thing. This is it. It is very difficult for such inexperienced persons to be situated in the determined action of Krishna consciousness. So when these people come in touch with a Krishna conscious practitioner, he cannot even relate to them. He cannot even relate to these people. For him, we are all strangers. We have strange desires. We are not normal people. You don't want to enjoy through the Vedas. Why are you trying to repress your sense gratification? So this is how they think. They don't understand that we want to fulfill our highest aspirations. Our highest aspiration is to do the greatest good to ourselves. But even to do the greatest good to ourselves, we need to serve Krishna. Of course, this is not the highest form of Krishna consciousness. But this is, at our level, this is an acceptable form of Krishna consciousness. But these people, they cannot relate to it. And it's very difficult for them to be situated in this pathway. Very difficult. It's actually, we have seen, I personally have seen, when people have excessive material desires, now, when I have excessive material desires, it is very difficult to get me to be situated in Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. Look, this is the thing. This is what we do now, this is what we will do later also. Very, very difficult. Because the mind is bewildered and distracted by so many things. And for everything, you will keep quoting the Shastra. So it's very, very difficult for these people. These people are in Shastric Maya. They are in illusion. But for everything, they will quote Shastra. As fools are attached to the flowers of poisonous trees without knowing the results of such attractions, unenlightened men are similarly attracted by such heavenly opulence and the sense enjoyment thereof. In the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, it is said, Apama somam amrita bhuma and akshayam havai chaturmasi yajina sukritam bhavati. Apama somam, we have drunk the somarasa. Amrita bhuma, oh, we have become amrita, eternal. That's a mantra. Anyone who performs the Vedic ritual known as Chaturmasya Yajna, he attains inexhaustible piety by which he can enjoy in the heavenly planets eternally. So there are statements like this. These statements are called Arthavadas. Arthavada. And the Vedas are abundantly filled with Arthavada statements. Arthavadas. They are something like our advertisements. If you go to Calcutta or even in other cities, some of the latest mobile phone advertisements are like this. Call your friend for 1 price per second and there's 1 star, there's 1 asterisk and there's a footnote in small print. Terms and conditions apply. Or another, buy a laptop for 2000 rupees only. And another star. And then there's so many things written in fine print. Some 3 or 4 lines. Terms and conditions apply. This only applies for those people who have, you know, who want to apply for this scheme, who have got like this, who have got this configuration. So many terms and conditions. But they're all written in very, very small, fine print. But the big print is, get a laptop for 2000 rupees.
What should I still hate? Buy a mobile phone, $0.
So it's like this. No, they're not false. They're not false. But these are advertisements. So the Vedas also, out of compassion for conditioned souls who are mad after sense enjoyment. They're mad after sense enjoyment. They're not even desiring sense enjoyment. They're mad after it. There's a difference between people who desire sense enjoyment and people who are mad after sense enjoyment. Mad after sense enjoyment, they'll even hit the wall and try to walk through the wall to get it. That's called mad. Desiring sense enjoyment is something, you know, okay, I want it. So they're mad after sense enjoyment. So the Vedas are very compassionate upon these people. So therefore you find these Arthavada statements to trap them. We will see that when we read Ramanuja's commentary. Because now Krishna is not talking about why the Vedas are talking in a certain way. In other words, those who perform the 4-month penances become eligible to drink the somarasa beverages to become immortal and happy forever. So you should understand when it says apama somam amrita abhuma, you should understand there is a star there, and that star is called a fine print. The fine print is called the Upanishads. The Upanishads give a clarification which say, hey, wait a minute, when it says eternal, it is not actually literally eternal. It is eternal from your perspective. You live for 100 human years. They live for thousands of years. So from your perspective, it is eternal. So it is apekshika. It is relative. So it is true. It is not false. The Vedas are not false. But it is relative. It is just like how the mobile phone advertisements say free and a star. What is the meaning of free? So nobody can take them to court. They will also produce arguments. Free is this. This is a dictionary definition of free. It is free. It is free. So you are stating it is free with some terms and conditions. What is wrong with that? So it's like that. Eternal. Eternal with a star. Even on this earth, some are very eager to have soma rasa, to become strong and fit to enjoy sense gratifications. When one takes soma rasa, one gets the potency of 10,000 elephants. Such persons have no faith in liberation from material bondage, and they are very much attached to the pompous ceremonies of Vedic sacrifices. They are generally sensual, and they do not want anything other than the heavenly pleasures of life. Keep in mind, these people don't commit sinful activities. They are sensual, but they are pious. They are not sinful. They are non-sinful sensual. Rare to see in Kali Yuga, but there used to be people like this. It is understood that there are gardens called Nandana Kanana, in which there is good opportunity for association with angelic, beautiful women and having a profuse supply of soma rasa wine. Such bodily happiness is certainly sensual. Therefore, there are those who are purely attached to such material temporary happiness as lords of the material world. So these people have no conception of liberation. These people have no idea of what liberation means. They have no concept of it. They have been to this heavenly place and coming down again. So many times they have gone in, through so many lifetimes. They don't have a conception of liberation. What it means to be liberated, that concept they don't have. And they don't understand this sense gratification is poisonous. Because after some time, they'll be kicked out of that heavenly situation. Which is very miserable. It is very miserable. It is like a man who is given a job of 30 lakhs a month. Suppose you're given a job for 30 lakhs a month. And you have to work only 3 hours a day in an AC room. And after 1 year, without giving any reason, they chuck you out. How will you feel? Intense misery. So it's like that. When you become a demigod, human beings are like ants for you. They are like small insects. But after becoming a demigod, you are made a human being again. Back to square one. So then, what do you think? I used to control all these creatures. These are all like animals. And now I have become an animal. Or like suppose you become a big temple president, GBC or some big thing. And you commit a great blunder, some aparad. And then Krishna just removes you and makes you back into rank and file. Back into Mr. Nobody. So overnight you wake up, you're nobody. Day before yesterday, you're a big shot. Today you're nobody. Nobody cares for you. Day for yesterday, when you said so many things, 100 people would listen to you. Now people, whatever you say, they say, hey, shut your mouth, be quiet. Just be quiet. It's like that. You become a big demigod. Demigods are very powerful people. They are lords of the material world, as you see. Lords of the material world. They are up there in universal administration, controlling. They can control. They have so much of power. They can control. When Prabhupada was, it's been reported that when Prabhupada was told that if there's some nuclear war, what will happen? All this nuclear radiation will destroy the earth. Then Prabhupada is reported to have said, what is all this? This is all some tiny little thing for the demigods. If Ganesh just blows, all that radiation will run away. It is nothing for them. These demigods are all super powerful beings. For them, all these things, these are all tinkering by human beings. Just tinkering with them, like children play a little bit. They're very powerful. So for them to enjoy and then be forcibly thrown out of that, it is great pain. But because they are so mad after sense enjoyment, they don't understand it. That is why it is considered to be poison. You see here, as fools are attached to the flowers of poisonous trees. They are considered to be poisonous trees. Because sense gratification yields misery. Human sense gratification gives human misery, small misery. But this is all deluxe sense gratification. It gives you deluxe misery. You go up, so delightful, and then you fall down, it is so bad. It's big misery. So it's considered poisonous. It's considered very, very poisonous. So Krishna here points out there are people like this. And you should not be bothered with them. Okay, now let me take out. Now there's a lot of, this is a very high density section actually. So I'll have to go. First of all, let me take up Baladeva Vidyabhushan. A lot of points here in this section. So I'll start with text 38.
Sukadukhe samekritva labha labho jaya jayo tato yuddhaya yujyasva naivam papam avapsyasi. Nanu athache tvam ityadi padyarthaha vyahataha rajyadyuddeshena kritasya yuddhasya guru vipradi vinasha hetutvena papotpadakatvat itiche mumukshu vartmana yuddhamanasya tava tad vinasha hetukam papam nasya adityaha sukheti. Krishna anticipates that Arjuna might be thinking that if I engage in this war for the sake of winning the kingdom, and my spiritual master and the brahmanas, and they are destroyed, definitely there is going to be sinful reactions for that. So Krishna anticipates that Arjuna might think like that, and therefore he says, no, you engage in a war, but you follow mumukshu riti. You follow the path of the people who seek liberation. Desiring liberation, you perform this activity of religious war. And if you do so, then sinful activities will not touch you. Samyak karanamiha tatra tatra nirvikaratvam bodhyam. See, he is saying you should consider that happiness and distress, success and failure to be the same. Notice. You should consider happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat to be the same. Now, what does this mean? This simply means that one should not be transformed, or one should not be agitated, or one should not be affected. One should not be affected by any of the material phenomena that happen. Without desiring happiness or gain or victory, sukhe tadheto labhe tadheto jayeche ragam akritva, without having any affection for that, for happiness or for the victory in the war, dukhe tadheto valabhe tadheto vajayeche dvesham akritva, and without hating distress or loss or losing the kingdom, tatra tatra nirvikara chitta san tataha yuddhaya yujyasva. So without being agitated, your mind should not be agitated what is happening in this war. kevala swadharma dhiya yodhum udyukto bhava. Simply consider, I am carrying out my specific prescribed duty. Thinking like this, you do. Eva mukshiritya yodha tvam papam tad vinasha hetukam na avapsisi. If you function like this, seeking liberation, then you will not get any sinful reaction. Palechu san yo yudhya te sa tat papam vindati. The one who is desiring the material fruits of the prescribed activities, when he engages in religious war, he will certainly attain sinful reaction. Vijnanarthi tu puratanam ananta papam apanudati. Whereas one who is seeking realization of the soul, he will not. He will in fact cleanse himself of unlimited sinful reactions. Nanu phalaragam vina duskare yuddha danado khatam pravrittihi iti che. Now sometimes we also think that I should perform this activity without any desire, without desiring any result. So he is also asking, without desiring a result, how can you perform such a difficult activity like war or charity, etc.? First of all, when you perform an activity, you are always desiring a result. It is impossible to perform an activity without desiring a result. How can you perform an activity without desiring the result of that activity? It is impossible to do it. Like for instance, I buy a book in order to read it. I walk to the temple in order to see the deities. I go home to eat, to take care of it, of my house. I go for a walk so that it's good for my body. I buy a bicycle so that I can use it. How can you perform an activity without desiring its result? It is impossible to do it. It is impossible to do an activity without desiring its result. And then Baladeva Vidyabhushan explains. So this is in Arjuna's mind. These are all conceptual. Arjuna is thinking like this, and Baladeva Vidyabhushan analyzing the thought content of Arjuna. Arjuna's words and Krishna's words. Iti ched, anantatmanandaragam tatra pravartakam grihana. You should consider that the happiness of realizing the soul is unlimited. So desiring that fruit, you perform this activity. In other words, the prescribed activities in the Vedas, they offer multiple fruits. They offer multiple fruits. When they say you don't desire the fruit of the activity, it means you don't desire the material result of that activity. The spiritual result that you can achieve through that activity, that you must desire. That you should desire. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will say later on, in the 5th chapter or maybe 6th chapter, Yoginah karma kurvanti atma shuddhaye, to purify themselves. So you perform these activities for a different result. You have a different desire. You don't have this desire. You have another desire. So the Vedic prescribed activities are given. And you can either derive a spiritual result from it or a material result from it. You don't desire the material result. You desire the spiritual result. That is the point. That is called Nishkama. Esha te bhihita sankhye buddhir yogyat pivarshino buddhya yukto yayapartha karma bandham prahasyasi. Bhaktivinoda. Sankhya artat jnana swadharma rup pratak pratak tattva sambandhini buddhir katha kathita hoilo. So far Krishna has expounded spiritual knowledge and swadharma. Separately he has spoken about these two. Ekshane tadubhayer jog sambandhini buddhir katha shravanka. Now you hear
about yoga. हे पार्थ, तुम्ही योग बुद्धि युक्त होइले संसार भय संसार क्षय करणे समर्थ होइबे. Then you will be qualified to extinguish this material existence. परे प्रदर्शित होइबे जे कर्म ज्ञान ओ भक्ति संजोत जक जो एक्टि मात्र. Later on you will understand that what is referred to as karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga. It's only one yoga. যখন কর্মের অবধিকে সীমা করিয়া সেই যোগ লক্ষিত হয় তখন তাহাকে কর্মযোগ বলে. যখন কর্ম সীমাকে অতিক্রম করিয়া জ্ঞান সীমার অবধি পর্যন্ত উহা ব্যাপ্তি লাভ করে তখন তাহাকে জ্ঞানযোগ বা সাংখ্যযোগ বলে. যখন তদুভয় সীমা অতিক্রম করত ভক্তিকে স্পর্শ করে তখন তাহাকে ভক্তিযোগ বুদ্ধিযোগ বা সম্পূর্ণ যোগ বলে. So what is referred to as yoga? Yoga simply means spiritual elevation to attain the Supreme Lord. So when that yoga extends from the current state up to the limit of Vedic prescribed duties called karma, then it's called karma yoga. But if it extends beyond karma and goes towards spiritual realization of the spirit soul as being different from the body, which is called jnana, then it is not called, it is called jnana yoga. But you should understand, jnana yoga simply means from here to karma and then to jnana. And then when you hear bhakti yoga, that means it is extending even further all the way to bhakti yoga. So one who is aspiring to attain the highest level is called a bhakti yogi. One who is aspiring to come to the point of jnana is called jnana yogi. One who is aspiring to come to the point of the limit of karma is called karma yogi. So the idea is that a bhakti yogi, jnana yogi, karma yogi may be involved in the very same activity. They may be doing the very same combination of activities also. But corresponding to their aspiration, whatever is their goal, they get a different name. So far, Krishna has spoken about Atma Tattva from verse 12 to verse 20. From verse 31 to verse 38, Krishna spoke about Anatma, about that which is not the self. He spoke about Swadharma. Now we will talk about how to connect them. Now one important point I need to bring out. Actually some of these points are so important and it is taking more time than I predicted. But I can't avoid it also. Okay, let me express this by means of a diagram. Red, I'll put this in green. Okay, this is correct. This is also correct. So this is one way of spiritual progress. There is another way of spiritual progress. From Bhakti Mishra Karma, you can also come to Bhakti Mishra Jnana, to Bhakti Mishra Yoga, Yoga Mishra Bhakti, and Kevala Bhakti. In this process, notice that you have Jnana which is added. And notice that here Yoga is being added. Here also Yoga will have to be added. Here bhakti is added. Bhakti Mishra Jnana is predominant. Bhakti is subordinate. There's more time given to Jnana, less time given to bhakti. Bhakti Mishra Yoga, more time is given to Ashtanga Yoga. Yoga refers in this context to Ashtanga Yoga. and less time is given to bhakti. And then one increases one's involvement with the... Sorry, I made a mistake. This point onwards, bhakti is added. Bhakti is added. Then from that point onwards, one increases one's involvement in ninefold devotional service. And then one continues to increase it and comes to Kevala Bhakti. So most of the commentators are talking about this process. Now this is commonly known. This is very commonly known in the scriptures. And it was an ancient process. And according to some commentators like Vishwanath Chakravarti, it naturally takes more than one lifetime. So notice that here, in this process, this is a roundabout process. Initially you add jnana, then yoga, then bhakti. But different things you keep adding. So some things are being changed. This is something like removing a thorn with a thorn and then taking out that thorn. Suppose you have a thorn stuck in your feet. You take another thorn. And with the other thorn, you remove this thorn. And then you throw both thorns away. So begin with Bhakti Mishra Karma. Replace it with jnana, yoga. And then you throw away this. That, this, everything goes away. Then it comes back to bhakti. Whereas this process, this is a process, standard process of increasing bhakti. In this, we only increase one. That's why I kept telling, we increase only one. One thing we increase. We are not interested in increasing different things at different points in time in our life. We only increase our involvement with bhakti yoga. Navadha bhakti. So, in Baladev Vidya Bhushan Prabhu's explanation, he is talking about this roundabout pathway. The Swanishtas, they make spiritual progress like this. The Swanishtas make spiritual progress this way, the roundabout way. This is the same explanation which is given by Ramanujacharya, which is also given by Keshav Kashmir. Even Vishwanath Chakravarti talks about this. Even Bhakti Vinod talks about this. Prabhupada also talks about this. I'll show you where Prabhupada is talking about it. If you open the 6th chapter, you will see Prabhupada talks about this. This is the 6th chapter. Just a minute. There are two references. Chapter 6, text 46. Purport. After 3 lines. When the linking process is predominantly in fruitive activities, it is called Karma Yoga. Predominantly in Karma Yoga. In karma. So this status is called karma yoga. Karma is predominant. When it is predominantly empirical, it is called jnana yoga. Jnana is predominant. So this stage is called jnana yoga. Jnana is predominant. When it is predominantly in a devotional relationship with the Supreme Lord, it is called bhakti yoga. When bhakti is predominant, it is called bhakti yoga. Okay. But on the next, go to the next purport. This is 4.67. Purport, third paragraph. This is the purport to 6.47. Third paragraph. The culmination of all kinds of yoga practices lies in bhakti yoga. All other yogas are but means to come to the point of bhakti in bhakti yoga. Yoga actually means bhakti yoga. All other yogas are progressions toward the destination of bhakti yoga. From the beginning of karma yoga, to the end of Bhakti Yoga is a long way to self-realization. This is what is called the indirect process. What I put out on the left, the roundabout way, that is the indirect process. It is a very long way to self-realization. Karma Yoga, without fruitive results, is the beginning of this path. So this is the beginning, Bhakti Mishra Karma. When Karma Yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, the stage is called Jnana Yoga. It increases in knowledge and renunciation, it's called Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Mishra Jnana. When Jnana Yoga increases in meditation of the super soul by different physical processes, and the mind is on him, it is called Ashtanga Yoga, Bhakti Mishra Yoga. When one surpasses the Ashtanga Yoga and comes to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, it is called Bhakti Yoga, the culmination. Factually, Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal. But to analyze Bhakti Yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas. The yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. One who sticks to a particular point and does not make further progress is called by that particular name. Karma Yogi, Jnana Yogi, or Dhyana Yogi, Raja Yogi, Hatha Yogi, etc. If one is fortunate enough to come to the point of Bhakti Yoga, it is to be understood that he has surpassed all other yogas. Okay? So that is the indirect method, indirect process. This is the direct process. You simply increase devotion service. So as the years keep going by, we should make plans to go on increasing various elements of our bhajana kriya. Or preaching, whatever. Within Bhakti Yoga, anything which we like, we should go on increasing. So now, Baladeva Vidyabhushan Prabhu's explanation, he, Ramanujacharya, Keshav Kashmiri, even Srila Sridhar Swami, and even Madhva, it appears to be like that. All of them are talking of the indirect process for the first six chapters. But Prabhupada has given fresh insight by explaining it this way. So in that sense, Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is a fresh, refreshing contribution to Gita studies. It's not just some meaningless propagation of bhakti. It's very systematic, as you will see. You'll see how Prabhupada explains. Very interesting. So anyway, in Baladeva Vidyabhushan Prabhu's explanation, he translates, following the other ancient commentators, he translates the verses to refer to the indirect process. So, from his explanation, basically what he is saying is, don't perform your material activities to just be stuck with that and enjoy your senses through that. You should understand that you can attain something higher. Come to the Jnana platform. Because in the Jnana platform, you will be able to relish the soul as being different from the body. Material sense objects can give you limited pleasure. The spirit soul, Jivatma, the minute spirit soul, because it's constitutionally different from matter, it can give you much more happiness. So you relish the soul. So you come to this point. So he explains, translates various verses from the Gita, as we will continue to see. He explains like this. So he is representing the standard ancient commentators, most of their commentary. And he explains in his commentary to text 39, Eshate Vihita Sankhya. Karmani kurvanastvam yaya buddhya yukta karmakritam bandham prahasyasi atmananda lipsaya bhagavadagyaya mahaprayasani karmani kurvams tattat uddesha mahimna tvadantar rabhyuddittaya atmajnana nishthaya samsaram tarishyasi. That you should desire the happiness of relishing the soul, and therefore under the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you should carry out these Vedic prescribed duties, which take up a lot of endeavor. But because of the glorious goal that you have set, you have a very glorious goal. Therefore, these very same activities, they will give you that spiritual realization from within. and you will be able to cross over material existence. Pashu putra rajyadi phalakam karma sakamam jnana phalakam tu tan nishkamam iti shastresmin paribhashyate. In this scripture, Krishna uses the expression of sakama to refer to activities with the desire to obtain cows, sons, kingdom, and so on. Sense objects. Whereas, if you engage in those very same activities and you are desiring the fruit of jnana, that means realization of the living entity, the spirit soul as being different from the body, then it's called nishkama. So in this shastra, these two types of paribhasha, these two types of usage, these two types of meanings are given. And he points out, even in the indirect process, there is no loss. In his commentary to text 40, he points out that even in the indirect process, there is nothing loss. There is no loss. Because he is desiring to realize the spirit soul. And as Krishna will explain later on, when you do this, you should chant Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat are the names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So because you are chanting the names of Lord Vishnu, and you are interested in realizing the spirit soul, therefore, there is no question of there being any diminution. Krishna will also make this point in the 6th chapter. Similarly, he explains Vyavasayatmika Buddhi verse. That these people, they are only interested in one thing. They want to attain the Supreme Lord through a certain process. Through realizing the spirit soul after purification of heart. So he writes, Hey Guru Nandana, Iha Vaidikeshu Sarveshu Karmasu Vyavasayatmika Bhagavad Archana Rupai Nishkama Karmabhihi Vishiddha Chittaha Visharnadivat Tad Antargatena Jnanena Atma Yathatmyam Anubhavishyami Iti Nishchaya Rupa Buddhir Eka Eka Vishayatva. A practitioner in this process, he has Vyavasayatmika intelligence. In the sense that I will engage in these prescribed duties given by the Supreme Lord. To do these prescribed duties given by the Supreme Lord is a form of worshipping Him. It's an indirect method of worshipping the Lord by carrying out His instructions in the form of these mundane prescribed duties. But I will do it desiring purification of heart, and by that these very same material prescribed activities will give me spiritual knowledge from within, and I will be able to realize that I am not this body. And in that way, I'll be fixed up. So they have only one, they also have only one resolution. They have only one resolution. Whereas people who don't even have a desire to attain liberation, they are engaging in the Vedic prescribed activities, but they are completely bewildered. They want to attain sense gratification life after life through the Vedas. And that is how he explains shlokas 42 and 43. There are lots of problems with these people. Avipaschitaha alpagyaha yamimam jyotishtomena swargakamo yajeta ityadikam vacham pravadanti. These people, they quote so many statements from the Vedas. Oh, you perform jyotishtoma, you will go to the heavenly planets. So anyone who desires the heavenly planets should do the jyotishtoma sacrifice. But these people have very little intelligence. Yameva prakrishta vedavagiti kalpayanti. They imagine that this is the supreme instruction of the Veda. Taya vacha apakrita chetasam tesham samadho manasi vyavasayatmika buddhir na vidhiyate na abhyudeti iti anushanga. Amongst, in their minds, this resolute determination to make spiritual progress, this thing, it doesn't arise in them. Vedasya satya bhashitvad evam eva etad iti pratiti mantaha ateva nanyad iti karmaphalat swargad anyat jivamshi paramartha jnanam labhyam moksha lakshanam nirratishayam nityasukam nasti. Now, not only these people are interested in sense gratification, they say that the Vedas are speaking the truth. So that is all there is in the Vedas. There's nothing beyond the heavenly planets and the enjoyment that comes out of all that. There is nothing called attaining realization of the source of the living entities, the Supreme Lord. There's nothing called liberation. There is nothing called unlimited eternal happiness. Tat pratipadikana vedanta vacham karmanga kartra devata vedakataya tat kheshatvaditi vadanashila. This is exactly what is called karma mimamsa philosophy. So they interpret all the statements of the Vedas to be containing information which is very useful for performing our fire sacrifices and going to the heavenly planets and enjoying the senses. So even though the Upanishads make so many statements that they are all temporary, don't be going after that, you should go after the soul, you should go after God, so they don't take it seriously. They say all these Upanishadic statements, they are all to be interpreted in a way that is favorable towards our going to heavenly planets. So don't take it too seriously. Chitta doshamaha kamatma vaishayika sukha vasana grasta chitta, and their hearts are also defective. They are filled with kama, desires for sense gratification, which means that their minds are seized with the desire to enjoy the senses. Evam chet tadrisham moksham kutaha nechanti tatraha swargeti swarga eva sudha devangana dyupetatvena parashreshtho yeshamte. So then why don't they desire liberation from material miseries? Because they are thinking that this heavenly planets, where you have nectar to drink and you have heavenly girls to associate with, this is the greatest thing. What more do you want? Tadrik vasana grastatva tesham nanyat bhashate. Because their minds are seized by these desires, they cannot talk about anything else. Also, you see, we will see this later on also. These activities that you perform, not only they take you to heavenly planets, they, after you fall down from heavenly planets, some of these activities, if you perform, karmas, if you perform, you go to the heavenly planets, you enjoy, and after enjoying, you fall down into a family where they perform these activities again. So you are given a second opportunity to redo these activities, to go to the heavenly planets again. So that is why Krishna is saying, look at this text 42. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth. So not only they give you to heavenly planets and then you fall and haribol, you become a nobody, some camel in Sahara desert. It's not like that. You are born again as a human being in a family where they do these things again. So you are given that opportunity. There are certain activities which ensure that these things happen. So these people take advantage of all that. Take advantage of all that. Being desirous of sense gratification in opulent life. What is that sense gratification? Bhogaha sudhapana devanganadihi. The sense gratification is drinking celestial nectar, association with the celestial girls, opulent life. Aishwaryam cha devadi swamitvam tayorgatam iti artha. Opulence means to be a lord of the material world like a demigod, and to be in this circumstance, that is opulent life. So they're desirous of all this. So they don't want anything else. They're not interested in it. So this is a certain type of sense enjoyment. This is also mundane from the spiritual point of view. It's all mundane. But of course, it's not like sinful life where you're interested in sense enjoyment of this world.
They are interested in celestial sense enjoyment. Vishnu Chakravarti, okay, both Bhaktivinoda and Vishnu Chakravarti. Let me first take, this is Bhaktivinoda's Rasikaranjan commentary. Well, this is quite similar to Vidvat Ranjan, so I'll skip this. But Chakravarti's explanation of Eshate Vihita needs some attention. Upadishtam Jnana Yogam Upasamharati Esheti Samyak Khyayate Prakashyate Vastutattvam Maneneti Sankhyam Samyak Jnana. Sankhya means clear knowledge, complete knowledge. Tasman Karaniya Buddhiresha Karita. And the type of intelligence with which you function with that knowledge, that has been spoken. Adhuna yoge, bhakti yoge, imam vakshyamanam buddhim karaniyam shrunu. Now you will be instructed in intelligence in bhakti yoga. Yaya bhakti vishayinya buddhya yuktaha sahitaha karmabandham samsara. With this intelligence, which is fixed in devotional service to the Supreme Lord, bhakti, and you will be able to cross over the bondage of karma. Neha vikramana shosti pratyavayo na vidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobhaya. Text 40. This is an important commentary, somewhat analytical. Atra yogo dvividaha shravana kirtanadi bhakti rupaha Shri Bhagavad Darpita Nishkama Karma Rupascha. So now you should keep in mind that there are two different types of yoga that are brought out here. One is bhakti, which is characterized by hearing about Krishna, glorifying Krishna, etc., which is what I keep talking about as bhakti yoga, Navada bhakti, nine types of bhakti. The other type of yoga is performing your material activities without any material desires and for the sake of the Supreme Lord, for the sake of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, offering them to Him. That means for His sake. He has said it, so I will do it because He has said it. I will not do it because I want it. I will do it because He has said it. For the sake of getting purified. So this is a different type of yoga. Tatra karmanyeva adhikaraha ityatah prak bhakti yoga eva nirupyate. Now prior to, you will find one shloka called karmanyeva adhikaraste in this. It just comes in a few verses later. Karmanyeva adhikaraste is text 47. So until text 46, bhakti yoga is brought out. Not that Nishkama Karma Yoga. Nishkama Karma Yoga is this. Bhakti Mishra Karma, the indirect process. That's what he refers to as Nishkama Karma Yoga. What he refers to as Bhakti Yoga is this process, straight, increasing Bhakti.
Nistraigunyo Bhavarjuna Ityuktehe Bhaktereva Trigunati Tattvar Tayaiva Purushaha Nistraigunyaha Bhavati Iti Ekadasha Skande Prasiddhehe. See, Krishna says, if you notice, in text 45, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna Nirdvandho Nityasattvastho Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. The Vedas primarily deal with the three modes of material nature. You should become transcendental to them. Yes, you should become transcendental to them. So Chakravarti points out that Krishna is saying this, become transcendental. Now it is well known from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that only if you, because bhakti yoga is a transcendental activity, it is not a material activity. Hearing about Krishna, chanting Krishna, Krishna himself is spiritual. The activity of Bhakti Yoga is the activity of the spiritual world. Satchidananda ekarase Bhakti Yoga tishtati. Krishna is standing in the spiritual world on the platform of Bhakti Yoga. It is mentioned in Gopal Thapani Upanishad. So Bhakti Yoga is coming from the spiritual world. Like we say, Golokir Premadhan Harinam Sankirtan. Hare Krishna mantra is imported from the spiritual world. It's not an activity of the material world. Similarly, all the activities of devotional service, ninefold devotional service, in which Krishna is the immediate center, these activities is directly coming from the spiritual world, from the spiritual plane. So they are transcendental. So only by engaging in Bhagavad Bhakti, you can attain transcendence. A material activity cannot give you transcendence. Only a transcendental activity can give you transcendence. This is Vishnu Chakravarti's special teaching, special contribution. He has brought out these points in a way that previously even Jiva Goswami didn't bring out. Very, very beautiful. Very beautiful. So it is well known that the activity of Vishnu Bhakti or Bhagavad Bhakti, Krishna Bhakti, Hari Bhakti, this is a spiritual activity. It is beyond the three modes of material nature. It is Triguna Atita. It is beyond the three gunas. So when Krishna says become transcendental to these three modes, what Krishna is telling him is you do Bhakti Yoga. You chant Hare Krishna. You do these activities. Don't get stuck with the Vedas. The Vedas primarily are teaching you processes within the three modes. But they are rarely talking about a process which is fully spiritual. So you follow that. Jnana karmano hatu satvikatva rajasatvabhyam nistrai gunyatva anu anupapatte he bhagavad arpita lakshana bhaktistu karmanaha vaipalya abhavamatram pradibadayati natu swasya bhakti vyapadesham pradhanya abhavadeva. That is the prescribed activity of jnana yoga. Jnana yoga is considered sattvika. In the 11th canto, he will quote all these verses, so I am not quoting them now. Jnana yoga is considered sattvic, whereas karma yoga is considered rajasic. Only bhakti yoga is considered triguna atita, beyond three modes. So you cannot interpret a statement of karma yoga or jnana yoga to be transcendental. So his point is, when Krishna says you become transcendental, you cannot say, oh, Krishna is telling Arjuna to do Jnana Yoga. How can it be? Jnana Yoga itself is sattvic. Jnana Yoga is not an activity which is transcendental to the three modes of nature. Nor can you interpret that to be Nishkama Karma Yoga, which is even more foolish, because that is beginning from Rajas and moving towards Sattva. So when Krishna says become transcendental, he is saying become transcendental means take up to Bhakti Yoga. And then when you say do bhakti, but that bhakti itself means you perform your karma for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. So there is some mixture. Like there are some people, there are some acharyas, there are some followers of great acharyas who say that you must engage in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. But what is that devotional service? They'll tell you that devotional service is what we call bhakti mishra karma. You primarily engage in varnashrama dharma for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. This is a very famous thing in ISKCON nowadays. Connecting to Krishna. This connecting to Krishna is what they consider Krishna consciousness. This is not accepted by Vishnu Chakravarti and the liberated acharyas of our line. They explain Krishna consciousness is not that. Krishna consciousness is you perform activities which are directly connected to Krishna. Your senses are directly in touch with Krishna. Like Jiva Goswami explains in Bhakti Sandarbha, there are three types of activities which are referred to as Krishna Bhakti. Now, this is an important point which has to be brought out, but there isn't much time. Anyway, I'll bring it out. The three activities, the first type of activity is called Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. Let me write it down. This is an important point though. Many devotees have told me that ISKCON devotees should understand this. Many of them don't understand.
Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. Second is Sangha Siddha Bhakti. Third is Aropa Siddha Bhakti.
The idea is, in the scriptures, there are different activities or different combination of activities that get the name Bhagavad Bhakti, devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So there are different scriptures which tell you this is Krishna consciousness or this combination of activities is Krishna consciousness. So in Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami has analyzed them. Very thoroughly he has analyzed them, very nicely. He says that there are certain activities which are constitutionally pleasing to the Supreme Lord. That very activity is pleasing to the Supreme Lord. It is not that you do that activity with this motive or that motive, with this consciousness, that consciousness. No. The very activity is pleasing to the Supreme Lord. So that activity is constitutionally called Bhagavad Bhakti. So those activities are called Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. Example, hearing about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shravanam Vishnu, glorifying the true glories, speaking the true glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kirtanam Vishnu, remembering the Supreme Lord, worshipping the deity form of the Supreme Lord, coming to the holy dham, serving the Lord's devotees, these are all constitutional, these activities constitutionally please the Lord. Just like fire constitutionally burns. Fire always burns. If you have fire, it will burn. So if you do these activities, it pleases the Lord. Of course, you don't perform the other activity of offenses. Okay. So these activities are called Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. Now, there are other activities, Vedic prescribed activities, which please the Lord, which please the Lord only when you mix them with Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. Like for instance, I told you, the activity of getting married. The activity of getting married is just karma. It's just a material activity. There's nothing spiritual about it. But if you marry a Vaishnavi, then you are doing two things. One is the Vivaha Karma and Sadhu Sangha. You are marrying a devotee. So you are doing both bhakti and karma. So that combination is also sometimes called Krishna consciousness, devotional service. But that combination is called Sangha Siddha Bhakti. So you are mixing. So by itself that activity is not pleasing to the Lord. But when you mix it with some activity from the Swarup Siddha Bhakti category, then it is pleasing to the Lord. Then Jiva Goswami points out that there are certain other activities which don't please the Lord by themselves, but if you perform them with a certain type of consciousness, then they please the Lord. You have to do it in a certain way. Only then they are pleasing to the Lord. Otherwise they don't please the Lord. So you have to superimpose a certain consciousness on that activity, and only then it is pleasing to the Lord. These are called Aropa Siddha Bhakti. Like for instance, if you perform, suppose you are a Kshatriya, you have to engage in this war. You perform this war considering this war is part of the Vedic scriptures. Vedic scriptures have emanated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it is His instruction, His agya, His order that every living entity carry out, every conditioned soul carry out His instructions. So as a Bhagavad agya, as the order of the Supreme Lord, so I am doing this. And I am doing it in a way that will hopefully please the Supreme Lord. May the Lord be satisfied with this. This is called Aropa Siddha Bhakti. Simply for a Kshatriya to go and fight, that doesn't make the Lord happy. There are so many pious Kshatriyas for millions of years, so many Kalpas and so many universes are doing it. That doesn't please the Lord. But you are doing it with a certain consciousness, then it pleases. Now, when Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when he uses the word bhakti, then he is talking about Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. You should keep that in mind. When he says bhakti, that is very clear from his own definition. He is talking about Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. We will come back to these three again and again. There is a lot of depth
These are very, very deep points. Very, very deep. A lot of discussion that we can have on this. Very important. In ISKCON, our devotee should understand this. We want to increase Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. You may do all the three, but we want to increase Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. That should be increased. Bhaktira Samrita Sindhu teaches us Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. Nectar of instruction, Rupa Goswami. It is promoting Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was promoting Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. Prabhupada was promoting Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. So it is our duty to understand this. Okay, I'll stop with this now.
I'm sorry, I'm out of time.
Just makes a big noise. Typical of me.
Come on, man. I swear to God. Thank you.